This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 36, Mid-Season Batting Blues. Coming up on the show, we talk about Ireland's rise to the top, the Kangaroo gives us a Mark Garraway rant, we talk about overtraining, undertraining, mid-season blues, and getting big, bulky, and inflexible if you do weights. Is it true? All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy, a cricket show. My name is David Hinchliffe. I am Director of Coaching for Pitch Vision Academy, and I look after things on the podcast. And joining me, as always, regular fixture on the show, Mark Garraway, Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. Welcome along, Garris.
Well, hello. How are you? You all right?
I'm keeping extremely well, and I'm very happy to say also that Burners, after Robo Burners last week, who we both enjoyed very much, the real Burners is back. Welcome back, Burners.
Good day to you both. Porridge in hand, it's getting a bit fresh. Summer is officially over.
Jumper on?
Jumper is on. V-neck, I've got the short sleeve underneath the long sleeve.
Oh, I see. Yes, okay, I was with you. I thought you meant two jumpers. I thought that's a bit over the top.
Oh, no, I have two jumpers. Yeah, the short sleeve and the long sleeve.
Two jumpers?
Yeah.
I think that's going too far, Gareth. What do you reckon?
Well, I'm not needing two jumpers. I'm very, very warm-blooded. So I'm sitting here in a pair of shorts presently, would you believe? I'm not two jumpers, man.
I've never worn two jumpers on a cricket pitch.
I don't think you can as a keeper. I used to hate wearing a jumper as a keeper. I used to feel as if I was even fatter than I am anyway.
I'm with you as well on that. Yeah, you need access. You've got to get your levers going. You've got to be springy, sprightly. You can't be, like, you know, 100% lambed wool up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my centre of gravity was low and heavy enough as it was. I didn't need to add any more weight or lower it anymore.
Well, let's talk about cricket news as well, because that's what we're here for. And, of course, Gareth, you were heavily involved with Cricket Ireland not that long ago. They've been in the news this week, wrapping up the World League.
Yeah, fantastic for them. And no surprise to me. I mean, in terms of structure, I think it would be safe to say that Ireland are the closest thing to a test-playing nation now out of all of the associates and affiliate countries around the world. So no surprise in that. I think the surprise to me is how many close games they have, to be brutally honest with you. And they seem to have a knack of losing games in the middle and then winning them at the end, which is a great one to have, I suppose, but not necessarily good for the coaches or the spectators' blood pressure as they're going along. But they're doing some great work over there. I know Richard Holdsworth, who took over from myself as performance director, has really added his own value to it. And Warren Dutrum, who's the CEO, who's widely recognised as one of the best in the business, is doing a great job over there. And structurally, they're going from strength to strength. And the investment that's going in from the two sports councils and from sponsors is increasing year on year. And there's no end to it, which is fantastic for the players and the public.
It's an interesting case, isn't it? Because Irish cricket isn't really tethered to tradition in the same way that other nations are tied to tradition. So they can play with things in a way that countries like India or England or Australia are not so flexible to be able to do. I mean, particularly with the way that they're building the first class structure there.
Absolutely. And the great thing about building one now, as opposed to building one hundreds of years ago or 50 years ago, like most of the countries around the world have, is that you can learn from the best practice. You can learn from other people's mistakes. And when I was putting together the first class structure, which is largely, it's been tinkered with a bit because it has to be over time, but it's largely what I put down a couple of years ago, 3 years ago or so. There was a lot of research into all of the ones that had been set up, and we took the best bits out of it. Richard Holdsworth and his crew have brought that to fruition, which is the biggest part of it. You know, writing a paper and doing research is one bit, but to get it over the line as they're doing is the next bit. So well done to those guys. And you can learn from everybody's mistakes and put a good one together. So again, once that's in place, I think there'll be another shift in performance, because the guys that are back in Ireland that are training incredibly hard with the world-class program that they've got around them are going to have competition through their first-class structure, which is going to take them to the next level as well, which is fantastic news.
And Berners, you've seen that there's a new national academy manager going in there as well, which is part of the progression for Irish cricket.
I have, yeah, Mr. Hogan, I believe he's been doing some fabulous work with Jersey and rewarded with a step up. I think they won Division 6. Is that right, Gareth? Quite recently, and looks like he must be a top prospect. So going into a very vibrant environment with growth on the mind.
It's great news for Hogs. He's one of the best blokes that you could ever meet. Fantastic chap on the level 4 program presently, due to finish that in December. Has made a real big impact on that cohort of level 4. I've known him for a number of years now, and he's somebody that I speak to on a regular basis, because he's just such an infectious character. I learn things from him, and hopefully he learns a couple of things from me. And he's a perfect man, because his natural levels of enthusiasm will be incredible over there. Also, he's worked at, you know, for Jersey, so he's got a perspective, because sometimes it's not always easy to go across to a country. If you've been working in a full test playing nation, then go across to a country and be met with some obstacles and what have you. But he'll go over there, and because of his work in Australia and his work in Jersey, he'll have a really good perspective, and he's a perfect man. He's going to have lots of energy, a cracking bloke, and he'll be a great fit over there.
I'd be interested in knowing about the grassroots level there are in Ireland. You must have experience with that, Gareth. What is the is there much of a difference in the grassroots system, the club system, the way that young players are introduced to the game in Ireland compared to, say, England, Australia, or India?
It's very close to the English model now. But still has its own Irish nuances, which it has to have. You know, you can't just superimpose one model onto another. But probably the biggest step forward for club cricket over in Ireland in recent years has always been a good structure, and there's always been a number of kids, but the retention of kids wasn't particularly good. And that was purely down to the coach numbers. So my first role, really, that I looked at the system and thought, how can I make the biggest impact possible in the first year? Was to put all our eggs into coach education. And at the time when I was over there, we had one person in the whole of the island of Ireland who was qualified to assess coach education courses. That wasn't good enough. So the first thing we did was get lots of people trained up as tutors, lots of people trained up as assessors, lots of people trained up as field-based trainers. So it became a self-reliant coach education system, rather than having to send people over to England to be trained. And that was obviously putting people off. So now I believe there's something like 23 courses at level 1 and 2 that are delivered over the island of Ireland. And the coach numbers have gone from about 200 to the thousands in the space of 4 years, which has hugely supported the school network and the club network.
And from a new cricketing nation, or a newer cricketing nation, to an older cricketing nation in the form of India, and we have probably the craziest league in all of cricket starting last week, and that's the Kanga League, the one that was played in monsoon season until very recently, and they've slightly moved it to try and avoid the rain, but it's still wet wickets and not ideal conditions for playing cricket. You might say that, coming from an Englishman, that's a bit rich, but it's got to be a crazy way to play cricket, hasn't it, Berners?
Sounds challenging, to say the least, but I can understand why they do it. I mean, talk about I think if there's anywhere that could recreate themselves cricket-wise, it's got to be India, and that's certainly one way to do it. Let's go out and let's really try and basically kill someone, because if I could just imagine the injuries, you know, one rearing off of the length and guys getting hit, and it must toughen you up. It must be quite good, very exciting to watch. I think they should put it on the TV.
Well, yeah, of course, it's played on the maidens as well, so you've got the overlapping boundaries, and it's often interrupted by rain, and when it isn't interrupted by rain, you've got some very difficult batting tracks. So an interesting way to play cricket.
I reckon it's brilliant. I was driving to a coaching session on Sunday, and I was driving past Bedminster Cricket Club, and it just got this squally shower came over. And the two umpires, as I was in a traffic jam, ran over, took the players off the pitch, and you know, in 10 minutes later, they'd have probably been back out there because the sun came out again. But to me, I totally agree with just getting on with it, because, yeah, as I've said numerous times on this show, I've seen more injuries on sandy outfields where people get their knees and their elbows caught into the ground when they're sliding than I ever have on a wet pitch. You know, wet pitches, you can slide, you know, as long as you've got footwear that can get a bit of grip, you know, you've got spikes on the bottom of your shoes, which you should have anyway, you're going to be fine. And if, you know, if the ball nips about a bit or bounces a bit, then so be it. You've got gear to be able to deal with it. And if not, then just get your bat in the way. Get on with it.
Yeah, I guess as long as people aren't aquaplaning, then it is time to get on with it, really, and not worry too much.
Get on with it. What's the first thing that we do, right? It pees it down the rain, okay?
Yeah.
What's the first thing that people do? They run out of the change room and dive on the wet ground and slide across it. I've seen it a million times. So why can't you incorporate that into a game of cricket when the very same people in a normal game of cricket wouldn't think about diving? Get on with it.
You've got very strong opinions there, Gareth.
I certainly have. Just play cricket. Crikey, it's a short enough season. If we can extend it a bit and a bit of rain, get on with it.
Now, it's all good fun and games, and I can see you've got strong opinions on this, Gareth. But is there any cricket, apart from the fact that you get a game in, is there any cricketing benefit to playing in adverse conditions like the Kanga League?
Well, there's got to be, hasn't there? Because in terms of being able to deal with different balls coming off the ground, bowling with a wet ball, Adrian Birrell, who was Ireland cricket coach leading up to a 2007 World Cup, who's a fantastic coach, now working with South Africa, top man in Ireland, because you do get a bit of rain. He used to get players to practice bowling with wet balls. So the way he'd do it is get some old cricket balls, stick it in a bucket of water, and then ask them to bowl and deliver their skills and work out a way of doing it. So from a bowling perspective, working with a wet ball, definitely. Secondly, you know, what happens as soon as a ball bounces on a pitch, you know, and goes up or down or a bit sideways, the whole change room starts to get heebie-jeebies, and all of a sudden you get rolled out for nothing. So if you can toughen yourself up to accepting that sort of thing can happen, you know, think about the preparation of it. If you get a pitch that goes everywhere, and then you, in the winter when you're playing in your Kanga League, and then you get to bat out in the middle and the ball starts to spin a bit, you'll be more robust and you'll be able to cope mentally with it and put each ball to bed and just deal with what's ahead so much better. If it encourages people to slide more because they know that they won't get hurt, it builds up the technique that when they go into fielding on normal cricket grounds, that they can take that technique into it. So to me, from a mental perspective and from a technical perspective, there's benefits. Obviously, there are extremes where that doesn't come into play. But, you know, that's only going to happen every now and again. And whilst I don't agree with everything that Jeff Boycott talks about, I do agree that in this day and age, we need to try and make cricket as accessible in as many conditions as possible, because we want the game to grow. And I totally take my hat off to the Kanga League, because I think it's a fantastic idea that I hope takes off around the world, particularly with artificial pitches around. I don't see there's any reason why we can't extend our seasons into October. If it pees it down with rain, just get on with it.
Fantastic. I like a Garraway rant.
I should have done that on Soapbox, shouldn't I, really? That was quite good. I enjoyed that.
Okay, well, let's move on with the show. Let's go into the yes-no round. And of course, this is the section where we have three questions, read by Berners in his own style. And Gareth and I get the chance to only say yes or no to the question, no matter how much more we want to say. So, Berners, when you're ready with those questions, fire away.
First question, Ireland should be the next test level nation.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to say yes, aren't I?
Second question, finding genuine all-rounders is a distraction.
Yes.
No.
Third question, Gary Kirsten's Indian experience makes him the perfect IPL coach.
Yes.
Yes.
It's time for the mailbag. Every week, two questions are asked, two questions are answered, and the best question wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we do request your questions every week. We pick a couple of good ones, so we've got those coming up. But Berners, if somebody wanted to send in a question, what would be the best way for them to get in touch with us?
They can drop us a line on the phone, and it's 020-323-97543. Or alternatively, want to drop us an email, it's coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed, it is. And we have had two people get in touch with us this week with those very questions. So if you've got a burning question, fire it away. And if it's a good one, it'll get on the show. We can't put them all on the show. We get more questions than we can ever answer. But good ones are always first in line. So, Berners, what's the first question that we've had sent in this week?
Our first question comes in from Nicholas. And he's saying that he started training at the age of 11. He's now 17. And he thinks that he's overtrained. Never a problem of mine. However, it is for Nicholas. Mm-hmm. He's saying that when the season starts, he looks to be in good form. But as it goes on and during the middle of the season, he starts to lose his form and starts to feel a bit lethargic. He's just asking if this is normal for a young player to experience this, and he's just asking what he could do potentially in pre-season to give him a little bit more stamina and strength through the season to last till the end.
Do you want to have a first run at this, Gareth?
Yeah, I do, because this is a very familiar story for me. As soon as I read this from Nicholas, I realised that I've got my own experience, but then also coaching experience, I suppose, to add to that. Overtraining, well, interesting. Only you can judge whether you've overtrained. But to me, the next bit is the telling. When the season starts, I look to be in good form. But as the season comes to the middle, I lose all my form and start to struggle. When I played, I reckon, and our season started in April, obviously, and went through to middle to end of September in county cricket. I reckon I was as good a player as we had on the staff in February every single year. And a lot of people used to say, oh my God, you're going to score thousands this year. You're playing really well. I bet you can't wait. And then by the time, August would come round, I'd be struggling. And the main reason why, this happens is we end up doing too much, and we in that period leading up to the beginning of the season. And the bottom line is that we only score runs and we only take wickets in the season. So there's no point in peaking in 2 months before you hit a ball in anger. And that's exactly what I used to do year on year. And I see the same mistake even in the players that I work with and program now at school. And I must have, last year in particular, with two players who are both very, very fine players, but ultimately vastly underachieved in the season. I kept saying to them, you're doing too much. Just chill out. Do your program sessions, but you don't need to do anything else. You've got more than enough in your program sessions. It's building you up perfectly. So the aim is that you peak at the key times of the season, which for us at school is May, but more importantly, probably for them in county cricket, is August and the beginning of September, which is where they're looking to get into. They're looking to impress their county coaches and get onto academies, or if they're on academies, they're looking to get into professional staffs. And ultimately, their competition time is going to be August. So there's no point in them peaking in February, March, and maybe the beginning of April, because it's not going to count. So think about how you program the last 2 or 3 months leading up into the season, because it sounds to me that you got too much intensity and too much volume in that period. And as a result, mentally you're sapped by the time the key games come along, physically you're sapped, and when those two things start to go, then they have technical repercussions. You lose your hunger to fight through certain situations, whether you're aware of that or not, that is what happens. And it's all about getting the intensity leading up into your season absolutely spot on. As I say, for me as a county cricketer, if we'd have been playing in February, I'd have been in the first team every week and probably batting in the top four. But the reality was I used to get my training program wrong, and I see it all the time in youngsters. And by the time we got into the May, June and July, it was whether I could bat at six or seven as opposed to dominating the innings at the top of the order. So I see it from two sides, from being a player, which you are, and also from a coaching point of view. Just get that intensity and that volume right leading into your season.
So, Nicholas, I think this is a food for thought answer. We haven't given you a 100% clear answer because we don't know your personal circumstances, but it's given you something to work with and some way to restructure perhaps your training so you don't feel like mid-season all that hard work that you've done in pre-season has gone out of the window.
Yeah, the simple guide, just ask yourself, is this session adding value? And do that all the time. I think it's a good one for everybody, not just for Nicholas. But, you know, is this adding value? Is this contributing to me getting better? That's a simple question to ask yourself for every session.
What's the next question, Berners?
The next question is from Ishan. And he's just asking that many trainers have advised cricketers not to use heavy weights as it makes their muscles subtly less flexible. And they also recommend that you shouldn't be doing quite a few specific shoulder exercises, in particular lateral raises. He just wants to know our thoughts on that. Muscle Man Ishan.
This is a very common question. So the first part of that question is, no, if you do it right, then any trainers who advise not to use heavy weight in all circumstances is incorrect. So you need to look at the individual circumstances of each player, but there's nothing inherent about using heavy weights to become big and bulky and lose flexibility. There's nothing in, you know, one does not automatically equal the other. So heavy training is a very good thing to be able to do because increased strength improves power. And if you do it with the right kind of flexibility training in there as well, you don't need to worry about losing flexibility. If anything, it will improve your flexibility. So don't worry too much about that. That would be my first piece of advice. The second question is about shoulder exercises. But let's come to that in a second. I'd like to get your views on the heavy weight training for cricketers issue, Gareth.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it isn't an issue. I think heavy weights is really important, but it needs to come at the right time of your physical development. And it's massively important that you get correct tuition in how you're doing that, because there's significant techniques evolved around doing it properly to get the maximal benefit, but also to remain safe. So it's not something I would ever advise anybody to just incorporate into their training program without having specialist advice on it, because it is a specialist thing. And it's also good, even if you have had that specialist advice, to tap into somebody on a regular basis, just as you would do your bowling coach, for example, because your action as a bowler can change slightly, or you might be not doing something you should be doing. So it's really important when you're dealing with heavy weights and you're dealing with such techniques as snatching and deadlifts and all of those things, that you tap into people who know what you're meant to be doing. So that would be the first thing. And it needs to come at a time where your body is ready for that. And I see too many people just going into the gym and doing it because they see it as a way forward. Any S&C coach that's worth their salt would assess you, would put you through your paces and in a lot of functional movement type things first, and some general movements like squats and lunges before they would even get you anywhere near some heavy weights. So there's a timing thing and there's a specialist coach thing that I would add to your answer.
Definitely building technique is crucial, and you don't do that by starting with the heaviest weight you can lift. You start with a very light weight and you build your way up to the heavier stuff as you get more and more technically sound. So, and stronger, of course. So yes, you have to be careful. But also you see bowlers, batsmen adopting a more bodybuilder-style program where they're doing chest and arms and abs and legs and all that kind of thing. And that's the way to go if you want to if you want to build muscle up without any thought about cricket improvement. And that's not necessarily the way that you want to go if you're thinking about performing improvements and reducing the chances of injury. Let's go on, speaking of injury, let's go on to the shoulder, because the shoulder is a more difficult question in that it's a very complex joint, that shoulder joint. There's bits that need to be mobile, there's bits that need to be stable and strong, it can be prone to injury, especially if you do the wrong type of thing in the gym. But everyone's shoulder is different as well. There's three types of shoulder. So, and different shoulder types have different ways that people can train. So it's a bit of a tricky thing to give a specific answer. Lateral raises, probably not the most functional shoulder training exercise that you can do. I wouldn't necessarily stop people from doing it, but also there's better ways that you can train. You can use a dumbbell to press overhead. You can do rows, and you can do a lot of shoulder work with pressing exercises like press-ups and dumbbell bench pressing and things like that. So it's not necessarily that the lateral raise is completely contraindicated for all people, but you might want to think about what benefit is this doing to me. If I want to have big muscular shoulders, then that's all well and good, but that's not necessarily a cricket-related question. And also you have to bear in mind shoulder health more generally. You have to bear in mind the mobility and flexibility of the shoulder. And those are things that you want to keep in mind when you're doing any kind of training with the shoulders. Do you leave shoulder training to the S&C guys, Gareth?
I do. I take my lead from the S&C guys, but also I do a lot of work with people on TheraBand because to try and simulate throwing and bowling motions. Because obviously shoulders play a huge part in that. And also I do an increasing amount of work throwing the heavier sort of sand-filled balls, which are a ball shape and size. So it's like throwing a ball, but obviously they are twice as heavy and three times as heavy as a cricket ball. And also that sort of stuff to try and increase volume and range and what have you is really important. And it is added on to the work that the strength and conditioning coaches do in the gym as well. So it's important to maintain that functionality. And by getting those sand-filled balls, which as I say can be either twice as heavy or three times as heavy as a cricket ball, yet the same size in the hand, which I think is absolutely crucial. Then we can increase people's movement and strength through a range of movement through using those types of bits of kit.
Anything to add, Berners?
Well, avoid weights like the plague.
Yeah.
Always get injured. Always get injured lifting heavy weights.
Thank you very much for undermining everything that we just said. Okay. Okay, that's enough questions for this week. Let's head to the newsroom where Daisy Cutter is waiting with this week's Pitch Vision headlines.
Thank you, guys. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter and this is the Pitch Vision News. JMS Cricket Academy from Yorkshire are providing pitch vision systems to trial artificial pitch surfaces supplied by Polytan. Pitch Vision software allows for tests to be conducted for pace, bounce and deviation of the pitch. JMS MD Jonathan Smith commented, "Integrating Pitch Vision into our testing procedure will help provide far more knowledge and a better solution to our customers' needs." The interactive focus this week falls on under 15 batsmen. Using the unique reporting system of Pitch Vision Interactive, we have compared under 15 batters' performance from around the world. The winner is Lever from England with 457 runs. The best Indian batter is Vinke with 145, and the number 3 is Ben Annan from South Africa scoring 105 runs on Pitch Vision. Can you get your name in the hat? For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
Well, it's soapbox time, and I already hear him ranting and raving. We've not got a mic near him, so hopefully he'll go back to the start, clamber up on the box, and give us his best shot for a minute.
I want to talk about batting. I've been doing the review this week of my team's, my under 11 team's performance in the summer, and one of the key points that I highlighted was that the players technically good. They know how to score runs. There were 50 scored. There was lots of big scores. We scored over 200 twice. But batting in context was the area that we had the most difficulty. And the challenge, I think, for that group and for any group of players at any level is to be able to understand not only the technical side of batting, not only the tactical side of batting, but also the pressures of being able to bat in different circumstances. Adapt your batting to whatever situation you're in, whether that's playing in a 2020 game or playing in a very long format game, and then bat within that context without making too many changes to your technique, because that is one of the most difficult things to be able to learn and to be able to coach as a batsman. Well, that is the end of the show for another week. Before we go, Mark Garraway has to make his weekly decision about the competition winner. Two very good questions this week. One regarding form and pre-season practice, and the other one talking about flexibility, big muscles and shoulder exercises. So, Garraz, which one did you prefer this week, Nicholas or Ishan?
Well, as you say, two great questions, but this week I'm going to go with one that we haven't discussed in the past. Strength and conditioning is something that we talk about a lot. Heavy weights is something we talk about a lot. And it's a great question, Ishan, because you made it shoulder specific. But this week I'm going to go with form and how what we do leading up into a season, and the intensity and the volume and how we plan and program that can have an impact on what we do when we're performing in season. So, Nicholas, this week, you've picked up the Pitch Vision course, so good luck, pick a good one, and enjoy.
Great question, Nicholas. Often overlooked aspect, and can be very frustrating for batsmen who feel like they work very hard in the winter and none of that is paying off in the summer. So hopefully that resonates with a few different people around the world. Now, Berners, if somebody wants to send in their question, maybe get the key that they've always been looking for to take their game to the next level, how would they get in touch with us?
You can give us a call at 020-323-97543, or they can drop us an email, and it's coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed it is. We also are on Twitter at PitchVisionAcad, and you can send a 140-character question in via that method. Or you can go over to Facebook, facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy, and post a question there and have a little look at some of the videos that we post up on there every day, every weekday. If you want to listen to the show, then you can also do so by going to iTunes, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you don't want to use iTunes to subscribe to the show every week, then you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link at the top in the green bar, and you've got the instructions for downloading the show every week to your computer, to your iPad, to your iPod, to your iPhone, or whatever device that you like to use. So that's all for this week. I hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Garraz.
Cheers, lads.